day 53, we get to hang out in 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. We're in chapters 2 and 4 of 1st Thessalonians, and we just get one chapter. We get chapter 3 in 2nd Thessalonians.
Yeah, and these are great letters, and these are ones we often skip. I tell you, when I was doing this reading, I thought, oh, these would make, I think that all the time, oh, this would make a great sermon series. And
I've done a verse-by-verse on these, too.
Yeah, these are really good.
Yeah.
For today, we're just doing a snapshot. I should start this. There you go. So Paul starts in chapter 2, and basically he is, it almost sounds like he's, if you just read this out of context, you're like, why is Paul bragging about all the work he did, in Thessalonica? Like, what's this about? And Paul is basically, what he's saying is, hey, you had a model for ministry.
Uh-huh.
I was that model. Right? He says, my connection to you is built on my selfless preaching of the gospel and sharing the faith with you.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results, right? We suffered. We were treated harshly, and we came to you, and we didn't shy away. He says, we dared share the gospel with you. He's like, when we were in these other places in Philippi, they tried to kill us,
mm-hmm.
right? And we came to you, and we didn't hide, but we boldly proclaimed the gospel to you as well. And we speak as those approve of God. And he says, we're not greedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask you for stuff. We could have asserted our authority. We could have demanded that you financially support us, but we didn't say that. Why? Yeah. We treated you like a mother. I love this. He says, just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Paul says, when it comes down to it, right, we tenderly, gently loved you and nurtured you and fed you and brought you along. Why? Out of the love for you that we have through the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, surely you remember how hard we worked. We were never a burden. Like, basically, he's saying, you can trust us.
Mm-hmm.
What we say is trustworthy because. And then there's this weird part at the end of chapter 2. Where he talks about how he wanted to come see them again, but Satan blocked their way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why Satan blocks their way, but he clearly says, like brothers and sisters, when we were orphaned and being separated for a short time, we longed for you. We wanted to come to you. Certainly I did again and again, but Satan blocked our way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know why that is. That Satan blocked their way, what he was trying to prevent in Paul coming back to Thessalonica. Perhaps it was just because the people in Thessalonica needed his help, or Paul needed to be confident in their faith. But for whatever reason, Satan kept getting in the way. But yet we see that God uses that for good, because it's because he couldn't get back to them that he writes them this letter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the writing of the letter, then we see this intimate connection that he has. And so,
going back to verse 9, where he talks about their toil and hardship, how they worked night and day, not to be a burden to anyone. It kind of reminds me, he says something similar in Acts, in chapter 20, about how hard they worked, and that, you know, like, kind of makes me think, like, how did he feel about let go, let God? Like, I feel like he wouldn't be on board with that. Like, he understood clearly that, like, part of God's provision is sometimes working your butt off, too,
While he had rights, and Paul's certainly not saying that it was bad for other missionaries or bad for other pastors to demand or want to be compensated, right? In fact, because Peter says, pay special honor to those who labor in the preaching and teaching of the word. That's their job.
Yep.
But Paul says, I never wanted there to be confusion about my message.
Right.
And I never wanted, and you get the feeling that there were these people. I never wanted somebody to be able to point to me and say, hey, you're only in it for the money, you televangelist. Right?
Take your special blessed handkerchief.
Right. Like, so he was wanting to be above reproach in that.
Yeah.
And then in chapter 4, Yeah, chapter 4, he talks about, there's a lot in there. He talks about living to please God, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is our responsibility as Christians. And so it's almost like he sets it up. Look, you know me. You know I worked hard among you. You know I wasn't a burden among you. You know I love you. You know I desperately want to be with you. Okay, now let's get into it. Mm-hmm. You have got to work hard mm-hmm. to pursue holiness, right? We told you this when we were there, and now we're telling you even more and more. It's God's will that you should be sanctified. Mm-hmm. Stop living in sexual immorality,
yeah.
right? Learn to control your body. Be holy, not mm-hmm. in passionate lust, but in holy submission to mm-hmm. God. And so we see, and he puts this comparison out there, like people that are pursuing holiness mm-hmm. are compared to people who don't know God.
Yeah.
And there's a reason he's making that comparison, right? Because if we're acting in a way that's pursuing lust and immorality, mm-hmm. then Paul says you're acting like somebody who doesn't know God.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
don't do that.
The Thessalonians viewed sex as a way to leverage things yep. for their own gain. And so
absolutely.
We see him explaining God's sexual ethics, mm-hmm. Which is just awesome.
Right. God doesn't call us to impurity, but to a pure, holiness, holy life. Yeah. yeah. And then he basically changes this too. Like, one of the ways that you love one another mm-hmm. is you treat each other with holiness sexually. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the thing to think yep. about when you're, when yep. you are
there's
engaging
in that. Yeah.
Well, but when you're engaging in sexual sin, mm-hmm. you're not just sinning against yourself and against mm-hmm. God, but you're actually participating in dragging somebody else into unholiness
yep.
as well.
Yep.
And then there's this snippet here where Paul says, oh, and by the way, right, starting in verse 13, I don't want you to be uninformed about this. Most likely some people were saying, hey, the resurrection of the dead has already happened, right? And Paul's saying, no, don't. And people are like, well, wait a minute. Then where's my mom? Where's my brother? Where are the other saints in the faith that we used to believe in? And how come I don't know that it happened? Am I outside of the faith? What's wrong? And Paul said, hey, look, I don't want you to be uninformed about this. Right? This is what it will be like. Nobody will miss it, mm-hmm. right? We all, when this happens, we'll all be raised. So don't grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. And this is, I say this every funeral, right? Especially every Christian funeral, that we grieve, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But we do not grieve as people who have no hope.
Yeah.
But that our hope is in the sure and certain resurrection from the dead and the coming of our yeah. Lord Jesus Christ. Because this is the hope we have, that mm-hmm. all those who belong to him will be brought up yeah. with him.
This is something I often write in cards, like sympathy mm-hmm. cards. That even in the face of death, like, God's promises still stand.
Yeah.
A day is coming.
So this is almost so
death.
So we would say this is a picture of the rapture.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when this will happen. I'm a big believer that this will happen before this great tribulation. Some people would say no, it happens at the midpoint. Others mm-hmm. would say no, it happens right at the end. And we could debate about that, but that's what this is. When people say rapture, this is kind of the text they're referring mm-hmm. to. So, and then we get to 2 Thessalonians, and I know we're pushing time today, but they had we took up less of their time yesterday, so we can go a little long. And 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, that's the last chapter in the text. And so it starts with a request for prayer. And Paul does this often. And whenever he asks for prayer, he's not asking that his life would be made simpler. He's not asking that his needs would be met. He's asking for strength to keep mm-hmm. going. He's asking for opportunities.
What an example.
Right? He and here he says, like what's he say? Pray for us that the message of the Lord will spread rapidly and be honored just as it was with you.
Mm-hmm.
And pray that we may be delivered from the wicked and evil people, for not everyone has faith, but the Lord is faithful, and he'll strengthen you and protect you from the evil one. Like this is the reality. Like, we are under attack. So pray for our protection from the enemy, and pray that the gospel will spread like wildfire. And then he warns them against idleness. And he can warn them against idleness most clearly because he demonstrated for them, we read in 1 Thessalonians, he reminded them, I was never idle. I worked hard among you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's saying to them, don't be idle. See, what happened is a lot of people in Thessalonica were waiting. They thought the end was coming very soon. So they were waiting for the end, and it was like, well, I don't have to go to work anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, if you honestly thought the world was going to end next year, you'd probably, and I've got enough savings to live on. I'm going to stop. And now, hey, they're out of food, and they're saying, well, I don't want to go to work, but I'd like to eat, and help me, give me charity, help me out. And Paul says, stop being idle. If you can work, work. Mm-hmm. And then he gives this thing, and we love to quote this one, right? If you won't eat, or if you won't work, you won't eat. The one who is unwilling to work shall not eat, in verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good rule of thumb to live on.
Yeah.
It doesn't say unable to work, mm-hmm. right? There are some people that are looking for work and can't find it, and there are some people that are unable to work for various circumstances. But this one basically says, look, if you're able to work, then stop looking for other people to provide for you and provide for yourself. That's the appropriate thing.
Yeah.
And he also talks about this, like if you're not working and you're idle, well, what are you doing? You're causing problems, probably. You're being a busybody. You're being destructive. You're being divisive. And so work. And then he ends with this thing here. Well, doesn't it? But verse 14, take special note of anyone who does not obey our instructions in this letter. And then he says this weird thing, do not associate with them in order that you may feel ashamed. Don't regard them as enemies, but warn them as you would a fellow believer. I think what Paul's saying here is not people outside the church, because people outside the church, we talked about this a couple Sundays ago.
Are not going to be obeying.
They won't act like Christians, and they shouldn't, because they're not Christians. But inside the church, if we have somebody saying, I am a follower of Jesus, and then they're acting in ways that are contrary to Jesus, Paul says, warn them like you would a brother, but don't hang out with them. Mm-hmm. Don't participate in this with them, right? That's not the way we're supposed to do it. And so there's a nice warning for us there.